Logic Podcast, Chicago's home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Gold Squadron Podcast. We are on episode 11, lucky number 11. I am here with Ron.
Hello, everybody.
Andrea.
Hey there, guys.
And a new correspondent for the podcast, Mike Jones.
What's up, everybody? How we doing?
So today, we're going to be covering a plethora of topics. We're going to be talking to Mike Lager, who is one of our new sponsors for the event Dragonfall. We're going to be reviewing the X Case by Active Minds Games. We're going to be doing our Unlock the Holocron segment, where we talk about the third preview of the Heroes of the Resistance. Some new cards got spoiled, just kind of our initial reactions. And our main topic today is talking about common mistakes made while playing X-Wing. This is, some people might think that's just for beginners, but some experienced players even make these mistakes, or just sometimes something that, gets confused while you're playing, and just common misconceptions. All right, so we're in the Unlock the Holocron segment, and we're going to go over these Heroes of the Resistance preview number 3 that came out. We got some new X-Wing pilots that were finally revealed, some abilities. So, 9-num. Some people pronounce it Nien-num, but I think it's 9-num. Am I right about that?
I have no idea.
Tomato, tomato, all depends on the emphasis. Oh.
All right, so we have him now in a T-70 X-Wing. He's pilot skill 7, and his ability reads, when you receive a stress token, if there are any enemy ships inside your firing arc at range 1, you discard that stress token. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that seems pretty solid.
I love it.
Would you consider R3-A2 an auto add-on?
I think he's your new possibility of more offensive stress hog.
Yeah, it seems like it would be strong. I just don't know what other builds would you have with him that would, like, what other droid would you put with him?
You could just keep him cheap and throw the R2 in there and use him more as a maybe like offensive weapon, because the other part of this is, you boost into range 1 with maybe like push the limit or something like that. That stress token is gone.
Or Talon roll, yeah, into an enemy. I mean, it seems good.
What do you think, Ron?
I think 9-Nub's great. I think we finally have a version of him that's going to see the table. This one is very powerful.
I mean, at 29 points, he slots in pretty nicely there at pilot skill 7. If you want to give him the Veteran Instincts EPT, do some shenanigans with arc dodging or just tracking down other ships, that's a possibility too.
It's pretty pricey though. I mean, there's an opportunity cost at 29 points. Yeah, it's a T-70, but you can get Wedge for 29. You know, there are lots of ships that you can get for 29 points. I mean, it's going to have to make up probably a third of your squad by the time everything's said and done.
Yeah, but you know what? These new T-70s, I mean, I love Wedge. He's got a cool pilot ability, but they have nothing on these new ships. You're not going to choose Wedge over this.
I agree. Just the maneuverability of the dial and the boost ability, or boost action, I should say. I mean, it's, I would love for those old X-Wings to be able to compete with the new ones, but they just don't.
You don't have auto thrusters. You don't have extra shields. I mean, these things are the direction that ships are going right now. And X-Wings are where it started.
Not to mention that these have the tech slot, and we have revealed in today's preview two new techs that I think are amazing.
They're really good. They're very, very powerful cards for a low point cost.
Yeah, we'll get to those in a minute.
Game changing.
Absolutely. So let's move on to the next pilot. We got Snap Wexley.
Snap.
Temin. Yes. Snap Snacks. So he's a pilot skill 6, 28 points. After you execute 2, 3, or 4 speed maneuver, if you are not touching a ship, you may perform a free boost action.
Boom.
Somebody's getting into range 1 for sure.
Dude.
Right.
I mean,
there are restrictions. There's an action, but yes.
I mean, just the fact that you could Talon roll and get a free boost action.
No, that's what I'm saying. You couldn't.
Well,
it's an action.
Actually, you could.
You can get free boost actions. You can get free actions.
Right.
And there's that new tech card, which we'll get to in a minute. But
right. What I'm saying is you couldn't really do a talon roll and then perform a free boost action unless you had something else
right.
at
Very
play.
True. Very true. Well, we'll get to some shenanigan cards in a little bit. But yeah, you can get a free boost action that lets you maybe get into range one and, you know, get also your focus token or target lock token. Or if you, you know, have maybe like vectored thrusters.
I think FFG, what they're doing, at least with these cards that, you know, we're going to get into the upgrade cards in a little bit, the game changing ones. But I think they're trying to make middling pilot skills a little bit more playable,
absolutely,
a little more effective. And I like it. I think, you know, this is a good direction.
Yeah, everything's not just about being the highest pilot skill. You know, you're getting some playability out of these lower skill pilots.
Snap is also going to be good against jump masters. Being able to fight them at range one is one of the best ways to beat them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's move on to Jess Pava. She's at pilot skill 3. And a really interesting ability here. When attacking or defending, you may reroll one of your dice for each friendly ship at range one.
That's awesome.
Jousting master.
Absolutely. You take Biggs, right? You put her... You,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Auto-include Biggs, so that's, you know, add that point,
yep.
Those points there. And then whatever else you want for flavor.
This is a... Just an efficiency dream.
It's really good. You just take a focus token every time.
This is what poor scum Boba Fett wanted to be.
Yeah. I really like that this ability is going to be very beneficial to players that can pilot well, because the trick is going to be actually flying in formations and not bumping. So I like that we're bringing that back into the game, because I felt like between the aces and then jump masters, being able to pilot your skill, your ships together in a formation has really fallen to the wayside. I haven't really seen anybody do that probably since wave 3. So I like that they're bringing that strategic element back into the game.
Fine.
I mean, that's true. Oh, yeah. Formation flying has gone a little bit on the wayside because, you know, aces and jump masters can't just boost or barrel roll out of your whole squad, so you kind of want to be a little more spread out.
Something I was thinking of is if you're flying in that four-ship rebel build, you know, with Garvin, Pass the Focus, Biggs, and a couple of other, like, you know, ships that have good synergy, like a good four-ship rebel build would have. What about Ordnance on Jess Pava, where you basically could re-roll three dice of a four-attack dice? It seems like it would be pretty decent.
A proton torpedoes would probably be,
or ion torpedoes. I mean, even ions. Yeah.
Well, you know, we've been kind of teasing these upgrade cards. Let's get into them and let's talk about the droid. Let's maybe go in reverse order than we have listed here. So we have M9G8. When a ship you have locked is attacking, you may choose one attack die. The attacker must reroll that die. And then the second part of this is pretty crazy. You can acquire target locks on other friendly ships.
Right.
Boom.
Love it.
Man, that's good. Basically, you can turn one of your support ships into Predator.
Yep.
It's really good. I mean, just imagine, you know, a lot of... I see a good synergy with this card, and of course Jess Pava that we just recently discussed, and her with even Poe, making Poe much more efficient, giving him Predator and using his focus token because he always wants to have it. So a focus Predator and save your APT for something else that Poe could have, like VI or something, you know. I mean, obviously they're designed to fly in formation. So.
Yeah. Another idea I have here is, I know that we're still kind of trying to decode the ARC 170, but if you had weapons engineer on one of your ARC 170s,
you do
one of your target on a friendly ship, that way they have the reroll, and the other one on your target.
One on an enemy. Yeah, because I think think that's how weapons engineer is worded, right? It says enemy, so you couldn't target lock two friendly ships, unfortunately. Right. But it seems like, yeah, they have great synergy.
Yep, no, definitely. And the thing that I think makes MRG8 dynamic is that it's a dynamic card in the game. Like, when you choose Predator, it stays on the one ship that you equip it to, where M9G8 can change throughout the game, as long as the ship that he's equipped to doesn't die.
I think this is a droid that's definitely going to get used. I saw it getting a little bit of flack from some people on the forums. It didn't make sense to me. I know it's 3 points, but
a bananas ability. I mean, you have to price that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same cost as Predator, except it's a Predator that can change between ships.
Yeah.
It seems crazy good.
I like that it's a droid ability, though, because that does limit the number of other ships that can take it on pretty significantly.
Yep, gives a little boost to Rebels there, which I think they need, you know, to have a little more variety in their list. Let's take a look at the next one over to the left. We have Snapshot. It is a EPT. It says, after an enemy ship executes a maneuver, you may perform this attack against that ship. Attack. Attack one ship. You cannot modify your attack dice, and you cannot attack again this phase. You get two red dice, and it must be range one.
This seems like another add-on for Nienub with R3A2. Throw the stress on the beginning during the maneuver phase and before the combat phase.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's your opportunity to double stress somebody.
Well, even you can double stress them if they push the limit during that time, but you can stress them before they have the opportunity to do so.
That's very true. Didn't think about that. You can prevent people from taking their actions.
Right. So if an ace tries to fly in front of you and kind of arc dodge you and get behind you, it's much more difficult for them to do so. In particular, you know, the thing that's kind of powerful about Snapshot is it kind of allows you to shoot twice. This is Fantasy Flight again, involving another game mechanic where, you know, and this is an EPT, you can put it on a lot of things. But basically, you can attack during this phase. This phase is the maneuver phase. You can still attack during the regular, during your normal combat phase too. So you can attack twice. I don't know if M9G would trigger on Snapshot or not. I don't think so, because they're pretty specific about not being allowed to modify
it. It definitely would
types,
not, because you M9G8 would be a modification.
Yeah.
Right, but so would the Emperor.
Well,
so, I mean, not that any ship containing Palpatine.
So here's my question about Palpatine. So I know Crackshot would work because it's not considered a modification, right? If you needed to use it in mm-hmm. that point.
Right.
But isn't the thing with Palpatine, like, where it says the word you is not Palpatine, it's like the ship that it's equipped onto, like the snow. So the argument, for instance, for Omega Leader,
that is a specific thing with Omega Leader. That's a specific wording with Omega Leader. You couldn't palp this, because the way Omega Leader works is Omega Leader equips a target lock onto a ship, okay, and whatever that ship is locked on, okay, that ship cannot modify its dice against Omega Leader. Palpatine can do that as long as Palpatine's ship is not the ship that's target locked. Does that make sense? Because Palpatine's a separate entity.
Right, right.
It's not like Palpatine is not a dice modification. It is.
Hmm.
Well, I get, you know, what Dion's saying as well, but I think you're right, Ron, that you can't modify it. Basically, you can't really modify Snapshot with Palpatine. But I don't think that would ever really trigger, because you're spending your EPTs on other things. There's too much of an opportunity cost for other things.
That's very true. Very true.
Now, with Snapshot, just crazy ideas throwing it out there. How funny would it be to see it on Major Rhymer, where you could use it at range 2?
I like it.
1 to 2.
It would give him a use.
I mean, it's right up there. It would be expensive, of course, but yes.
I say, why not?
With Snapshot, would the enemy be able to attack, to roll defense dice against this? I mean, it counts as an attack.
Yes, they should be able to roll defense.
Okay. So if they're able to roll defense dice against it, I think the main advantage here would be, you know, R3A2. You know, I think they're just kind of like laying down the breadcrumbs for R3A2 for Rebels, and in particular Nien Num. It almost seems like an auto add on Snapshot R3A2. It just seems like they're trying to lay it down.
I mean, it's also a way to, it's just giving you a second attack. I mean, sometimes it's all you need to take down those aces. You know, it's a way to strip tokens and do that kind of a thing. And also, right. You got to keep in mind, this says, after an enemy executes a maneuver, you may perform this attack against that ship. I got to look at the flowchart. When would this trigger? Would this trigger after they've executed a maneuver and done their action?
From the way it's worded, I mean, Fantasy Flight is usually pretty good about the wording on their cards.
Let's not go crazy.
Well,
now.
I mean... Well, in the sense that, you know, of course, if they have to errata something, they've errated it. But if they say after executing a maneuver, that means once you put your ship at the other end of the template, you can fire this weapon.
If you have like FCS, you can get the fire.
Yep.
You can get the target lock for the attack.
Exactly.
On the next turn too. So, I mean, that would be interesting. You know, I think you probably have to pair it on something that can carry FCS that, like...
Like, I don't know, maybe Corn Horn, and you could shoot 3 times in a single turn?
That would be disgusting. That's pretty... I mean, again, you know, VI or PTL, it's 2 limits. It's 2 points for an EPT. I think you're probably taking one of those for survivability, but I think it would have interesting...
I don't know. If you can attack 3 times in a turn, you might just...
Yeah, I mean, Corn Horn doesn't have to be... the giant meat shield 48-point beast that he was, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get it.
All right, let's move on to our next card.
Okay.
We have Pattern Analyzer. When executing a maneuver, you may resolve the check pilot stress step after the perform action step instead of before that step. So basically, you can take your action and then get your stress token.
I need 10 copies of that card.
Well, more importantly, is that this
yes,
is a tech slot
it is
slot
a tech
card.
Slot card.
Remember last week when we talked about Kylo's shuttle and how it had 2 tech slots, and we're like, I don't know if that's going to be good.
Yeah. That's
wow. Especially with a ship that can stress like that. It's,
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it has a stop. I mean, they haven't revealed the dial, have they?
No.
But I'm pretty sure it'll have a stop.
And what can you do with that Pattern Analyzer and Snap Wesley?
Well, you can. What's the combo there? You can do your 2, 3, or 4. Yeah, your talon roll action free boost. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
All of a sudden, you're LOATSY.
Yeah, I mean, literally do, what, 85% of the moves on your dial?
It's going to be really good. I can see, like, you can now do R5-P9 on Poe with Pattern Analyzer.
And yeah.
It seems now you get regens. Now you get regens all the time, even when you Talon roll. That's gross, and you don't need Kyle for it anymore. I mean, for a while, you know, I flew... At Nationals,
Jake,
I flew
Kyle, and Poe.
Right, and because of the synergy of passing the focus token, and Poe wouldn't die. Now you've got a 2-point, Poe won't die, and you're free to do whatever you want with R5-P9.
Seems good.
For 2 points, it's a better version of an
I'm
advanced
a fan.
Sensors.
Yeah.
But you have to be made after the Galactic Civil War in order for you to be able to use it.
That's fair.
I mean... You could even put it on First Order TIEs, and I think
you could figure out
a way to make it work. The Black Squadron pilots or a crack swarm, that you would use a Pattern Analyzer to just keep your actions, to be able to focus or, you know,
I like
when
it.
You're doing a sloop or a K-turn.
I like it. All right, and our fourth and final spoiled card here, we have Primed Thrusters, small ship only. Stress tokens do not prevent you from performing boost or barrel roll actions unless you have three or more stress tokens.
Yeah, another awesome tech slot for 1 point, which would be totally snaps.
Man.
And nine numb. I mean, you can go anywhere. Anywhere you want to go, just go.
Oh, and it's very easy to trigger that removal of stress tokens, too, if you're able to perform a boost action with Nian Nub. That's just, I mean, oh, you're not an arc yet? Let me take a boost after doing a K-turn. That sounds fine.
Do you guys know what this sound is?
Yes.
Can you hear that? That's me tearing up my Tycho.
Basically, I mean, three or more, so three is the limit, very similar to Captain Yor with stress. You know, it's just something that, you know, with Prime Thrusters, small ship only. So let's see, you can only put it on. I mean, it probably has the best applicability to, you know, you can only really put it on T-70s and first order ties.
So here's a ISFs. Logistics, I guess, question for you in terms of when things trigger. So with this Prime Thrusters, it says stress tokens don't affect your ability to perform the booster barrel action. If looking back at the first new pilot we were talking about, 9-Nub, receive a stress token if there's an enemy ship inside your firing arc at range 1, you can discard that token. Which card ability triggers first? The upgrade card or the pilot ability card? Or the pilot ability, I should say.
So first of all, Prime Thrusters is not a triggered ability. Prime Thrusters will be called a static ability. It's stress tokens simply don't prevent you from performing a boost or barrel roll action. 9-Nub specifically says when you receive a stress token, if there's an enemy ship at range 1, you may discard that stress token. So you would have to be at range 1 to discard that token. You wouldn't be able to then boost and then be at range 1. Does that make sense?
That would just be
ridiculous. It's not what you're thinking. I see what you're getting at, but it's not that. Yeah, that would be cool, but it's not that.
But it's also a tech slot, and like we've said, there's very few ships that actually have this slot. And there are ships that aren't necessarily, I'll say, common at a competitive table. So I think maybe they're just trying to throw a bone to some of these other ships that really aren't seeing competitive play right now and bring back into the fold.
Oh, this is definitely trying to get more T-70s and more first-order ties on the table and the new shuttle and all that stuff. What's also cool about Prime Thrusters is his interaction with BB-8. You can now use BB-8 even if you're stressed at the start of your turn.
Still have to take that comm as an opportunity cost for the pattern analyzer for 1 more point. But if you're trying to squeeze it in, it seems like you said, just a good auto add-on.
Yeah, like I said, if you're running BB-8, I think you take the Prime Thrusters. If you're not running BB-8,
so I would definitely say, you know, there was a couple of people in our play group and even online when they first revealed the Heroes of the Distance were like, oh my god, this is just a money grab. You know, you have to buy another Falcon, you have to buy another T-70. But I think that the cards they put in this pack is making it more than worth it.
Yeah, you know, everyone's always going to complain that anything that looks like a reprint is a money grab. And, you know, it's because all of us that play X-Wing, okay, we've played for a long time. A lot of us have 2 Falcons. A lot of us have multiple T-70s. People have to remember, when FFG makes a product, they're not also making a product that only targets the people who are currently playing the game. Every game has to have a product that lowers the barrier of entry into a game to get new players in. Because as many people love X-Wing and start playing X-Wing, there's always a drop-off of some people from every game that, you know, maybe it's not their game anymore, maybe they're tired of it, or life gets in the way and they can't play. So you have to get new people in. And this is a super great entry-level product. Like, you could be a new player, buy the Force Awakens core set, buy this set, and boom, You have an absolutely awesome squad. You can
so
take to the table.
So when do you think we're
going to
be seeing this in stores? I know that we already, at our store, we already took pre-orders a while ago when they first spoiled it. We think in maybe Force Friday with Wave 9. I don't think maybe with Wave 9, but...
So it's definitely not coming out with Wave 9, which is next week. Force Friday is a possibility. I wouldn't hold my breath. I'd be really surprised, to be honest
That's
with you, if this
about.
Drops in time for it to matter for the World Championship. It seems like a lot of stuff that they would be adding to the game at the last minute for people to kind of scramble through and holding to their past history. Very rarely do they drop like a pretty good release right before Worlds. So my guess would be we would see this for sale at Worlds and then probably immediately after.
I'm here with a special interview. I'm real excited to announce our first ever sponsor for the podcast. We're going to be sponsored by Dragonfall Events. Super excited. I'm here with the founder of Dragonfall, Mike Lager. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on tonight. I really appreciate it.
No problem. It's our pleasure. You reached out to us and you said, Dion, I want to sponsor your guys' podcast, help Dragonfall grow, help you guys grow. I'm extremely thankful about that and just really excited.
Yeah, I think it just makes too much sense. We were looking to do some sponsorship and you guys have supported our events. So, you know, one hand washes the other, so to speak.
Absolutely. So let me make sure I have this right. Dragonfall, you know, you guys are marketing it as the Midwest's premier autumn gaming event. First year was last year, 2015. Am I right about that?
That's correct. Yes, our second year of the two-day event. We've had some smaller events that were just one day in nature earlier this year, but this is the big event coming up for us.
Yeah, certainly. And one thing, I don't know if you're aware of this, Mike, last year's big Dragonfall two-day event was actually my first ever X-Wing tournament.
Well, that's exciting, and I'm glad that you were able to attend, and we look forward to seeing you again this year.
What was your inspiration for starting Dragonfall?
I've been attending different tournaments around the Midwest area for over 10, 12 years, albeit a different system. You take time off work, you get to, you know, drive usually for not an insignificant amount of time. And I found that depending on the event that I was going to, the player community had definitely gone in a direction. This was for a different game system, but had definitely gone more around the competitive, even hyper-competitive type of environment. And, you know, so it's like, I'm taking all this time off work, but I'm just going to play a jerk across the table from me. And so we wanted to kind of focus on playing these silly games, but from
Absolutely.
A fun perspective,
I mean,
if that
makes
sense.
They're games, right? Not, it's not life and death. You're not getting paid to do it. You're
yeah.
there just to play a game. You know, you kind of talked about some of the negative experiences you had at other conventions that helped shape the idea of Dragonfall. So let's talk about what games are played at Dragonfall. Of course, when we're on an X-Wing podcast, we know that there's X-Wing.
We have a number of different games that we're playing. So the main event that we have is in the Warhammer 40K realm. We have Infinity. We have a bolt action event. And we also have a Kings of War two-day event. In addition to a bunch of X-Wing events, we have that trench run table from last year's experience. And so we're looking just to build on it. And we should have an uptick of about 30 to 40% more people this year, which is pretty exciting. Going forward, I'm hoping we can introduce board games as early as next year's event, maybe do some comic book stuff, like cosplay stuff, you know.
Absolutely. So let me get to my next question here. Where did the name Dragonfall come from?
So it really started for me as the logo. So if you're familiar with the logo at all, I was obsessed with the design aspect of the business first. and I really wanted to have a really standout logo. And so what had happened is, you know, being kind of a dork and a gamer, right? To brand something Dragon is definitely at the high point of your life when you can do that, right? But it really, I kind of stepped into it backwards from the perspective that I was noodling that kind of overall logo design for Dragonfall. And then, you know, with different things that have obviously been out there for a long time, Dragonfall is actually the name of a speed metal band in Japan, I think. So we couldn't get the Dragonfall URL immediately, so we have to put a dash in the name, mm-hmm. right? So, but it definitely, its origins were probably like in 2004, right as I'm sorry, 2014, right as I negotiated the venue for the first Dragonfall. You know, I was just unentitled name up to that point, and I'm like, okay, we have to figure this out, and I had many a sleepless night working on the logo, and fortunately, my rendition was brought into form by a friend of mine's wife, who's a fantastic graphic
designer.
These
guys are all familiar with awesome
And that's
wives.
How we've kind of ended up with Dragonfall.
Yes, we are.
I would hope so. I couldn't do it without my wife. She's very understanding, and she's definitely the coolest person that I know because she lets me do this stuff.
Awesome. So let's talk about some of the events that are going to be happening at Dragonfall related to X-Wing. So on October 15th, we have the 100-point dogfight. In the evening, depending if you made the cut, there's going to be Death Star Trench Run event and a hangar bay. Is that correct?
That's correct. So the idea, again, is if you're only able to make it out for one day, so let's say that it's me and I'm going to get knocked out in the first round, which is what would happen. And so rather than me just, you know, that being the cap in my day, that's when I have another opportunity to fight the hangar bay. And then there's two times for the trench run. And then on Sunday is when we're going to do the team dog fights.
So I'm super excited for all these events at Dragonfall. I know I'll be there with some of my Gold Squadron teammates. Anybody listening to this, come on down to Dragonfall. I mean, it's going to be a great time. Like Mike already said, we're going to Dragonfall is taking place at the Pheasant Run Resort in St. Charles, correct?
It is.
Right. So I was going to say West Chicago, but I think they're right next to each other.
They are. It's pretty easy to get to from any tollway or highway, really.
Fantastic. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for coming on the Gold Squadron podcast. Thank you for your support of the podcast, and we hope to continue to grow with Dragonfall in the years to come.
I really appreciate it, guys. I think it's fantastic what you're doing, and we look forward to seeing you on October 15th and 16th.
All right, so we're in our main topic here, common X-Wing mistakes. Mike, why don't you go ahead and take the first category there?
Sounds good. So measuring. So these are basically like when you're dealing with measurements, first thing we want to talk about is you want to measure range from your attacking ship to all possible targets. So once you activate your attacking ship, you want to get all possible targets. That way it gives you a frame of reference for any other battle strategy on what you want to do and where you want to attack. Now you may measure range after declaring use of the card effect if it has a range restriction. So like Lone Wolf would be a perfect example of this that you could measure for when you're attacking. Kyle Katarin, range 1 to 3. Biggs, range 1. Anytime
Gen
you have...
Wars.
Right. After declaring use of the card on the effect that has a range restriction, that's when you measure for that range. Not before, you know, that's one of those things that like most of the time, if you're playing someone who's flying casual, they're not going to really care too much. But in a tournament setting, perhaps it's not best to do that. Measure range on the ship that you want to target lock. This is one of the things that, you know, these are common X-Wing mistakes, so we're going to talk about. I just get into the target lock thing. New players are kind of surprised sometimes when they measure for a target lock and then realize, oh no, I have to take it now. But yes, once you measure for a target lock, you must take the target lock if you can. But that's the only time that you would measure for range during the activation phase. That's another thing. You can't really measure for range at any other time in the activation phase other than taking a target lock. So when you're measuring with a weapon that uses an arc, it's measured the closest point to you in arc. You may only measure distance during combat phase from the ships that you have activated, not your whole squad versus your enemy's full squad. You see this a lot with people flying identical pilot skill squads where they'll be like, okay, who has the best shot? You know, we'll go from there. But you have to activate each ship. Even if they're the same pilot skill, you have to choose the activation order and then measure from that specific ship, not from your whole squad. It's something that happens a lot. And it gives you information, and if your opponent does it, it gives them information. And so it's something that you may want to watch out for if you're in a tournament setting or if you're trying to basically follow the rules of the game. And one more thing about measuring. This is one that tripped me up a little bit. Nubs do not count when measuring for distance, but they count for bumping in the final position of the ship. The only time that nubs count. So if you're measuring for distance, oh, I'd nick the nub. I've got you. No, you don't. Don't actually.
Well, that's not entirely true. Nubs do count on when measuring for bombs.
They do count. What?
Yes, they do. They're part of the bomb.
Oh, okay. That's a good point, Ron.
So the actual nub on the bomb token counts as part of the bomb.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. So the nub on the bomb token counts. And now if my nub was closest to the bomb at range, like within that range one, if you're dropping a bomb, that would still count, right? Or would it?
No, the nub on your ship would not count.
Okay, but the nub on the bomb itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
Got it.
I just wanted to be clear because you're using the word nub, and there's a nub on one of those too. I was just being a technical jerk.
No, I appreciate
Rules
it.
Lawyer
That's great.
Away.
I love it. Love it.
Lawyered.
Uh-huh. And another key point, I think, about measuring in general, it's to your advantage when you're activating a ship to, as Mike said initially, measure to all possible targets. And even if someone is clearly not within range, you are totally within your right and probably should still put down only because it gives you an idea of where they're at relative to you for your next round of attacking after you move. So anything that's a little bit more of an advanced concept, but using that knowledge to help plan your next move will really take you to the next level in your skill play.
Absolutely. Well, Andrea, go ahead and take our next category, talking about dice.
Okay. So, first off, dice are not rolled simultaneously. Attacker rolls and modifies their dice, and then the defender rolls and modifies their dice. So, you don't roll all the attack and defense dice at once. Attacker has to roll their dice and choose whether or not they want to spend any tokens to modify their dice or activate any abilities to modify their dice before the defender ever rolls any dice. So it's important to just remember that in the sequence of events, because obviously if you had a situation where you roll three focuses on an attack and you have a focus token, you're obviously going to spend it, but you might not spend that if your opponent ended up rolling three of eights. So you can't use that information to your benefit when you're performing your decks. Another tip, a die result can only be re-rolled one time. Counts if you're re-rolling it or if your opponent is forcing you to re-roll it. A die can only be re-rolled one time. And then lastly, with the focus result, which I kind of just hinted at, when you spend a focus token, it turns all focus icons on all dice into its full result, whether that's an evade or a hit.
On the person's dice who's spending the focus.
Correct. Good point.
Just in case we have a new player, like, why would I help my opponent?
Well, like I just said, you spend your token before the defender has a chance to roll their dice.
Yeah, very true. But if it was the other, like, if I'm the second person,
sure,
you know,
that makes sense.
Anyway, All right, Ron, go ahead and let's talk about some actions here.
Important things to remember about action. This is actually probably one of the most common, I think, mistakes I see new players make. You cannot perform the same action twice in a turn. So if you're in the combat phase, you have push the limit. You cannot focus twice. You cannot evade twice. An action is different than assigning or executing. For instance, Sunderfell or Whisper. So, you know, let's use Sunderfell as the perfect example. It's probably the most popular ship. You perform a maneuver with Sunderfell. You get to take your action, focus. You push the limit to take a evade token. And then Sunderfell's ability triggers, which then assigns you a focus token. Now, you can have both of those tokens to you because you didn't take two actions to get them. It is important to note you cannot spend them both in the same instance either. Whisper is kind of the same deal. Whisper can take the focus action, then he can make an attack, deal a damage to the opponent, and then get assigned a second focus token. Barrel roll and boost issues. When you take a barrel roll, you have to declare which direction you are going to barrel roll. Then you may try to perform that barrel roll. If the barrel roll can make it on the direction you chose, you have to perform that action. If it can't, then you can take back the action altogether and perform a different action, or you could try to barrel roll to the other side. But if you do the other side, then and you can make it anywhere along that side,
Ron, one thing I want to interject here. Something about that barrel roll, they clarified it in the FAQ. If, let's say, you know, you initially wanted to go barrel roll from front to back, you know, to kind of barrel roll you forward, and that doesn't fit, but you would still fit, let's say, going from center to center or back to front, you still have to go that direction, no matter what.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just clarifying, yeah, that's all.
That's what I'm saying.
Upgrades. So just a couple of little things here. Every ship gets one modification upgrade. It's not on your upgrade bar. It's not listed there anywhere. But that's the cards with the backing that has the little wrenches on it. Every ship gets one of those. So, and some ships even get two, depending if you have a title or something like that. Right now, I think the only ship that can do that is the TIE Interceptor with the Royal Guard title. Am I right about that? I don't think there's anything else I could take too, but yep. It's real important when you're building your list to remember it's not just what's listed on that bar there. We have modifications. Also, if your ship has a title, that's also something that is not listed on the upgrade bar. So just be aware of that. Let's talk about rules as written versus rules as intended real quickly here. If you intend to play in tournaments or, you know, are just trying to make sure you follow the rules. You know, check out the X-Wing FAQ online. It's free to download. I have it, you know, downloaded on my phone. Real clear color pictures and good explanations for any type of card changes they've made. And really read the words on the card. We talked a little bit about it earlier. You know, sometimes FFG isn't super clear, but they are clear about, you know, steps and phases and when things happen. So a perfect example would be R3A2. It's when you declare the attack. So, you know, if you're playing in some type of tournament and you declare your attack and you do your attack and you say, oh, by the way, I want to stress you, you've actually missed that window. So really make sure that you read when your effects go off. Mike, you want to talk a little bit about Asteroid Setup?
1-0 by Paul Heaver basically goes through how critical asteroids are, and it really can, like, depending on your matchup, it really can define the game. Proper asteroid setup can really help you mitigate your opponent's more powerful advantages. So, for example, if you have a list that you're facing that probably doesn't want to joust, you're going to make sure that the list that you're facing has to go through either a large asteroid, like a clumped up asteroid field, as opposed to the loose ones. And you're going to make sure that, you know, you have the best, you know, one thing that Ryan Fleming told me, when you're picking your squad, you always know your worst matchup. And to choose the rocks or obstacles that is at the disadvantage of your worst matchup gives you a little bit of an edge. As far as asteroid setup in general, basically if you have more ships, you want the asteroids to play less of a factor, so you're going to put them in the 2-2 corners of your own, because you can always control the speed of your ships, but not necessarily your opponents.
I'm a huge believer in turn zero. It's something that if you want to be an elite X-Wing player, you absolutely have to consider.
And there are definitely games where you can win or lose a game before you've even started rolling dice. You know, there are those extremes where you know, you set up the rocks badly and you get into an engagement. I'll tell you, when I was practicing for Gen Con, with I was playing, you know, Dengar and Manaru lists. When I set it up on the left side, I was putting my asteroids too close to the edge, and I had an opportunity during one of our practice games to do a sloop, or where I would have liked to do a sloop, let's say that. But because I had tucked it in too, the asteroid too far on my side of the board, I didn't have the space to do it. Like, it was just impossible. I had to go around. I didn't get my double arc, my double shot with Dengar's ability, and it just kind of went downhill from there. So if you plan on engaging somebody in a certain area, make sure you have the asteroids where you need them. So let's continue here. Flying in formation. So there's another Paul Heaver article on FFG titled Mastering Ship Placement. You know, flying in formation, you know, we talked a little bit about it earlier, isn't something you see too much right now, but I think it is an important skill, and it's definitely something that you can use to your advantage with a lot of these new range 1 or range 1 to 2 abilities. If you plan on using Bix Darklighter, who is a very powerful card effect, you need to know how to fly in formation to get that to work. You know, understanding your activation order. Your lower PS ships should be in front of your higher PS ships because they're going to move first. You don't want your high pilot skill ships to be in the way of your lower pilot skill ships when you're moving. So just making sure that you... you have your ships placed right. Any other comments about that part?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right about making sure that you arrange your formation the appropriate way. I know people might think, well, I can just mark my higher pilot skill ship and be able to execute the maneuver. That's true. This is still a game where when you're using markers and things of that nature, and we're all humans, so when you put it back, there's going to be a little margin of error there, and if you don't account for that, your ships will bump. And it's very... So making sure you're very aware of that placement is going to be key, and that's definitely going to be part of your turn zero setup, is arranging those appropriately. And also, obviously, for newer players, you might think, well, I can just move my higher pilot skill ship first, so it's out of the way. None of them are going to bump. Again, depending on the scenario in which you're playing, your opponent might be fine with that. But in a competitive event, you're not going to be able to get away with it. So it's good to get in. It's good to form good habits while you're practicing, so that way you're not surprised by it at a competitive event where you're already a little bit more stressed out or a little bit more excited and more likely to make those types of margin of error mistakes anyway.
Another thing to keep in mind when with the flying in formation article, talking about mastering ship placement, using the edge of the board when you're deploying is another solid strategy. Basically, you know, if you line up on one side of the board, your opponent, if they fly into you, has no place to K-turn and no place to get away. The edge of the board is kind of your friend. So if you line up on that edge of the board, you know, usually it can behoove you to do so.
Yeah, especially if you could draw them into you so you can K-flip and they can.
Excellent. And finally, our last category here that we're going to be covering today is crits and in-game effects. So it's real important, you know, those critical those critical cards that you get on your ships when you flip them over, you know, they have effects that we need to make sure that we remember while we're playing. I know it's happened to me. Sometimes I get a little lazy, but using those crit tokens on your ships is definitely a way to try to mitigate some of those mistakes and forgetting those crits. You know, for instance, a couple weeks ago, I was playing a game at Pastimes with a buddy of mine, and you know, we're keeping it pretty casual. And one of his ships had gotten Council Fire, and that is a crit that every combat phase you roll a die, and on a hit result, you take a damage. And his ship only had one health left. We didn't put a crit token down. You know, we're there chit chatting, and we go like three or four rounds. The ship didn't get shot for a while again. Because he had disengaged with it, but we totally forgot about Console Fire. And during a tournament, or you know, when you're quote unquote playing for real, that's definitely something you don't want to forget. You know, because it's part of the rules of the game.
And that goes two ways. Obviously, you would hope that as the player, you're not going to try to intentionally, effectively cheat your opponent. You know, hopefully everybody that plays this game has respect for each other and all the other players of this game. But there are certainly crits that, like you have one listed here as an example, turns are red. If you're executing a maneuver that will affect your critical, or rather that will cause your critical to trigger, if you've forgotten about it, but your opponent reminds you of it, I mean, you have to honor that. So you could really put yourself in a bind by not remembering all of those different effects.
Oh, absolutely. I've had my decimator flown off a board for me forgetting about that particular crit. Mm-hmm. The turns are red. I'm like, oh, I'll do a hard three, and I'm already stressed. Oh, wait, no, you won't. You're going to fly off the board. Oh, yes, I guess I will.
Yep.
There it is.
Yep, bye.
That's how... That's how Lyle lost the only game he lost in our 7 or 8 round store championship that we had. Is he forgot about his Lambda Shuttle had a, you know, a red turn because of a crit, and Francois flew his shuttle with Palpatine right off the board.
Bye.
That's great. Just to give Ron's story a little more credibility, that somebody at that high of a level, you know, missing a crit like that, I mean, it does happen. It's happened, you know, it's happened to all of us, I think, you know, because there's just so many things going on that if you don't keep yourself cognizant of it, it's just one of those, you know, we're talking about common X-Wing mistakes. I mean, they happen.
And especially,
I mean, this is one of them.
Sorry. And especially in a competitive event like that, where it's 6, 7, 8 rounds of play, your brain gets tired. If you're not constantly putting those visual reminders in front of your face, you're going to forget it. I mean, we're human, and those are long days. And it's during those competitive events where every move and every action really counts, that's where you would never forgive yourself. Like, you know, Mike remembers this one time that he had something flown off the board. I'm sure he doesn't remember the other 5 million times that he did the right thing for his action and his maneuver. So it's just one of those things where once you do it one time, you're never going to do it again because you suffered the consequences. But it's tough of those things where you just need to give yourself some credit and acknowledge the fact that it's a long day. Even our Pastimes 4-round event days, I mean, by the 4th round, a lot of people are a little tuckered out. So just giving yourself a little bit of trigger is not the worst
idea. I think my worst forgetting something, a game state that ended up screwing me because I just didn't check it. This was a store championship. So my first store championship, we did it at Pastimes. I was super excited. This was like round 3. I was 2-0, feeling good, flying the Trandoshan Slaver. First move, I did a stop maneuver. I'm like, okay, cool, stop maneuver. Next turn, I forgot, what's the other move that's red on there? I think I got a 4 forward or something.
Or a hard 2.
I think that's what I had dialed in. I did a hard turn there, not the hard 3, a hard 2. I was like, okay, yeah, I want to do that. And then my opponent looks at me and goes, and I look down and go, oh, man. And I just, yeah. I put my head down and hand him the dial, and he goes, I'm sorry. And I'm like, no, I deserve it. Just do it. And, you know, he hard threes me to the right off the board, and that was great.
So if there's one thing as a new player that you would take from this article about common mistakes is developing good habits. All of these things we're telling you can be much easier corrected if you start doing them the correct way every time. Every little time you do it, and then it'll become second nature. Because actually, with the new floor rules, you cannot take notes during a game match. So I don't actually think you'd be allowed to write triggers and actions on your hand anymore in a match. But if you play X-Wing every time, and every single time you stop and think, oh, I want a cloak, or oh, put this critical hit token down next to my ship to remember my criticals, you will be far less likely to forget when it comes to a big game or a big stage or in your big moment, and you're stressed, you're thinking about the maneuvers, and you're like, oh my gosh, Paul Heaver's on the other side of the table, what do I do? It's just practice makes perfect. And if you can do this at your local game when you're having fun with your friends, it'll be that much easier in a big tournament.
Yeah, and one thing I started doing when I'm playing is I talk through everything that I'm doing. When I'm putting a token down, when I'm activating a card effect, I'm just talking through it, and it's, you know, it's for my opponent so that they know that I'm just not moving things randomly on the board, but it's honestly mostly for myself not to forget the steps. You know, when I'm doing an action, I move my ships. All right, so I complete this maneuver. Now I'm going to do a focus action, and now I'm going to activate my next ship. I mean, I talk through everything while I'm playing. It just avoids, mm-hmm,
absolutely,
like you said,
and
avoids
we're spending
those
a lot of time talking about criticals because those tend to be the most soul-crushing mistakes. But it's just as important to remember these kinds of token effects with ion tokens, for example, and affecting your maneuvers on the next turn with stress tokens that can affect a plethora of different things between your moves and your actions and triggering abilities and all those kinds of things. There's a reason that FFG makes the tokens and puts them in your box, so you might as well use them.
Yeah.
Here's another thing, too. This is a really small detail, but I noticed when I'm in a tournament, I've seen a lot of times when people forget about a token, say they forgot that they had a focus token or a stress token, and I'll be honest with you, 9 times out of 10, when the reason they forget about it is because, especially on big ships, people like to put their tokens on that big ship. And what'll happen is you're used to studying the field. You're used to looking on the map and looking for those tokens. And when someone puts a stress token underneath their giant YV666 and they don't see there's a stress there and then they dial it a zero, That's usually the reason.
That's a good point. So making sure that the tokens that are being used are visible when you're looking at them from the top down onto the field, and they're not hiding underneath the big
a wing
ship.
Or a giant ship. Exactly. I can't tell you the number of times people have forgotten to use like a focus or an evade token, because it was underneath like the wing of their Falcon or Slave One. You know, and it's like, you know, the end of a round, we're going to dial, and we go to clear our tokens during the end phase. And like, oh, I had a focus there. Can I use that? It's like, oof. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. And that's another point to make as well. When you're playing the game, whether or not it's, you know, a window of opportunity to bend a token like Ron just described, or more importantly, if it's a window of opportunity for you to affect the game with a card, an upgrade card that you might have, or any other kind of action that you might be able to trigger, anything like that, it's your responsibility as the player to know what your card do and what abilities you can trigger and explain those to your opponent if your opponent has questions. But if you miss the window to activate that ability or use that token, you've missed it. And it's not your opponent's responsibility to remind you. I mean, you might come up with a nice opponent, especially in a casual format, that will remind you of those tokens or remind ability, but in a competitive scenario, they're not going to, and I wouldn't either, because you're playing to win.
And it's not there. It's not your opponent's job at that point. And if you are the opponent who sees that somebody missed an opportunity, you know, it's not wrong of you not to remind them about their own stuff. And I think that's a whole nother episode we could talk about. You know,
the difference between a missed opportunity and a game violation are two different things.
And I know if you feel bad about that as a person that's playing, if you see that your opponent is making a mistake, or they're not triggering an effect of a card or something along those lines, that's a may ability and not a required ability. A lot of times what I do after the match, I will remind that person that they didn't trigger that ability that they had the opportunity to trigger, or they didn't use that token that they had the opportunity to use. And that way they can improve their game going forward.
So I wanted to take a second to talk about the X Case by Active Mind Games. At Gen Con, they were kind enough to give us some of their product, and they asked us, can you please try out our X Case and do a review on your podcast? And I said, absolutely, I'll be honest, I'll be thorough, and I'll get you guys your review. So here it is. Just kind of some particulars about the X Case. It is sold for $9.95 each. You can buy it off of the Active Minds Games website. One thing that will be necessary if you're going to be using it with X-Wing miniatures is buying the magnetic insert, which is $5.95. So on their website, they advertise it fits a lot of other things, but I'm going to focus here on the X-Wing part, because that's why you're listening to this, is because you play X-Wing. Let's talk about the cons first, talk about the bad news, and then we'll get to the good news. So number one issue I had with this is that they do not fit large base ships. You can kind of finagle it in there if you had like extra foam or, you know, some way to pin it in without them knocking around kind of at a weird angle, but it doesn't even work for all of them. Doesn't really work for large base ships. Other than that, this very small part, some people like to use rubber stoppers on the bottom of their bases. This is now talking about small base ships. That way they don't slip on the board. If you do that, it'll need a slight modification when you put the flex steel on the bottom of your base so that it sticks to the magnet, but nothing too huge. That's really it when it comes to cons. I really like this product. It fits all small base ships through Wave 10 on two pegs, except for the Star Viper, which fits on one peg. You can cut down a huge amount of your setup time while playing by having all your small base ships already on the bases. That was probably my favorite part. I took one evening after work, and I put all my ships on bases and put the magnets on. And I was ready to go. You know, I had them all in my X cases, and the next day we were going to play Heroes of the Arturia Cluster. I had all my TIE fighters, was able to just quickly pull them out and get going. Other cool thing about this is that it has a modular design that allows you to connect up to 12 of them together to make a travel case. The provided handle is quite sturdy, so I wasn't really worried about them falling out or anything. Another part of the modular design is that you can stack these on top of each other. You can stack them side to side, face to face, or even back to back. The other use that they do advertise, and I'm going to probably be using it this way as well, is as a display case. Because the front of it is clear, you can, you know, place them on a shelf, and you can see all your minis there. They even have holes so that you can drill it into a wall if you wanted to, as a wall-mounted display case, which would open and close, so you have practicality there, so that when you want to play with them, you can pull them out. One really cool idea I've started doing already is with my printer, is I've printed out some strips the height of the back, kind of like space scenes or battles, and just I glued that into the back, and it just looks really cool as a display case with a space age background. Really cool. The other thing, which maybe is not important to you, but is important to me, these are recyclable. If they were ever to break, or you wanted to replace them, or hopefully not, but if you're, you know, giving up gaming and you're just getting rid of your stuff, don't just throw them in the trash. They actually are recyclable. Unlike the foam that a lot of us use in most cities, foam is not recyclable, just goes to the trash and kind of piles up in landfills. My verdict, I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 Death Stars. I love the versatility of the design. In my opinion, it is the best storage design I've seen for the price for small base ships. My number one suggestion to Active Mind Games, if you ever plan to expand your line of products, an extra large case that fits all large base ships on 2 pegs would be amazing. If that happened, I would exclusively put all of my X-Wing miniatures in X cases. That has been my review of the Active Minds Games X case, and we are going to be giving away a pair of these next week on our show. Come back and listen, and we'll be giving those away.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
So, for those of you who don't know, Gold Squadron plays out of Pastimes in Niles, Illinois. We have several different monthly events and regular play nights that are coming up all the time. So, X-Wing Open Play and League Night is every Wednesday night. We start around 5 o'clock. Armada Open Play and League Night is every Thursday night. Every Friday night is just kind of open Star Wars gaming. We do everything from X-Wing to the card game, RPG, just whatever people are up for that day. Some upcoming tournaments we have at Pastimes on October 2nd, starts at noon. We have our monthly X-Wing tournament. And then, like we talked about earlier, we have Dragonfall 2016 at Pheasant Run Resort in St. Charles, Illinois. That is October 15th and 16th. On day one, we have the 100-point dogfight tournament and side events featuring the Hangar Bay format and the Trench Run. On day two, we have the 150-point team tournament and the presentation of the Squadron Cup to the squadron that has accumulated the most points during Dragonfall's one-day events that took place earlier this year and during the October 15th and 16th events. I will tell you, Gold Squadron is pretty high up there in the rankings. Currently, we're in first place. Hopefully, we can hold on to that unless somebody comes down and challenges us. All right, so just closing notes here. I want to thank all of our listeners and everyone who has liked our Facebook page so far. We are currently at 260 likes, and I would love to get to 300 likes before the end of November. If you could share the podcast with your friends, family, and that guy at work you barely talk to, and you only talk to him when you really need something, tell him to like the page too. I'm not going to do like Asa and Tyson and curse your dice if you don't join the page or like it. I hope you will just do it out of your own free will. Last things, I've gotten a couple messages asking why don't we start a discussion group. The real reason is that our squadron already has a discussion group, and you are more than welcome to come join it. It is the Pastime Star Wars group. We post discussions and questions about all kinds of Star Wars games, so feel free to join us. The easiest way to get to it is www.pastimes.net/Star Wars, and that'll redirect you to our Facebook group. And of course, like I said earlier, if you could like our podcast page, that would be amazing. If you like to Twitter, go to @GoldSquadron. We are on Twitter. If you ever have a question or anything, you can feel free to email us, goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com. We also do receive messages through Facebook Messenger if you prefer that. Final thing here, if you would be so kind as to go onto iTunes and give us a review, tell us what you think about the podcast, help us spread the word, be really appreciated. We do have some news coming down the pipeline during the next episode. We're really excited about some exclusive alt art cards we're going to be discussing and giving away, as well as some custom swag. We'll talk more about that next time on the podcast. Thank you very much for listening again. Gold Squadron, out.